Oh, hello, folks. It's Ken David Stewart, and I'm going to read to you a bit today from my latest published novel, The Light Demon. Here's chapter 17. Lionel had just gotten out of bed on a Thursday morning. As usual, he was feeling groggy due to drinking a couple of shots of Jack Daniels, along with taking the Zopiclone medication that his doctor had prescribed to help Lionel sleep. Lionel developed severe insomnia after his wife's passing. For the first half hour upon awakening, Lionel felt like he was trying to navigate a ship through some heavy fog. In a robot-like fashion, Lionel got his coffee maker set up and poured himself a large glass of water. It was time for Lionel to take his morning medications. The older that Lionel got, the more meds got added to his list. He took Proscar for his enlarged prostate, as Lionel had a history of prostate cancer. He also took an Allopril and a water pill for his high blood pressure. For the painful arthritis in both his knees and back, the professor took Tylenol 3 three times daily. He was also prescribed a cocktail of antidepressants by a psychiatrist. These included Cymbalta, Prozac, and amitriptyline. The amitriptyline also helped his back pain and his insomnia. As Lionel did not respond as well as expected by his current regimen of antidepressants, his psychiatrist added the antipsychotic med Abilify as an adjunct. As a side effect of the large cocktail of pills that Lionel was now ingesting, he found himself feeling excessively sleepy during the daytime. A few months ago, his family doctor arranged for Lionel to have a sleep study done at the hospital. Lionel's sleep was monitored all night while he was hooked up with electrodes. During the next day, he was asked to take short naps every hour to check for other possible sleep disorders. Approximately a week after the sleep study, Lionel had another appointment to meet with the sleep disorder specialist. The sleep doctor informed Lionel that he definitely had the condition known as sleep apnea. This was to be expected as Lionel was about 80 pounds overweight. The doctor also told Lionel the daytime sleep study showed inconclusive results, but that she could not rule out the possibility of narcolepsy. The appropriate treatment plan that the doctor selected was that Lionel used a CPAP machine when he went to bed at night. She also prescribed the stimulant medication Ritalin for use during Lionel's waking hours. Lionel now had so many medications to take that he kept all his medications in a little blue travel bag. After Lionel had taken his morning medications, he went to the kitchen to make himself some toast. After the toast popped up, his coffee was ready to pour. Lionel took a knife out of the drawer and spread marmalade on his two pieces of toast. He then walked a short distance to his easy chair in the living room. As well as being a voracious reader, Lionel also liked to listen to audiobooks. He was 60 years old now and found that his eyes became tired after about half hour of reading. To satisfy his hunger for reading material that would not strain his eyes, Lionel found that audiobooks were a good alternative. In this way, he found that he could add at least an hour or two more reading to his daily routine. He was presently listening to the audiobook version of The Two Towers from J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings trilogy. Lionel had just finished packing his pipe with Bork and Riff tobacco when the phone rang. Lionel picked up the receiver.
"Hello, could I speak to Dr. Lionel Hardy?" the caller asked.
"Speaking.
Sir, this is Rick Jennings, the supervisor at the House of Hope Community Rehabilitation Center. I'm calling because your son Gary went missing yesterday evening. Is he by any chance with you?"
"No, I haven't seen or heard from Gary in about a year. The last time I talked to him on the phone was when I informed him that his mother had cancer. I haven't heard from him since that time," Lionel answered.
"Sorry to hear that, sir. But if he happens to call you or drops in at your home, could you let us know? We've already reported Gary's absence to the police as being a vulnerable missing person."
"Oh, I certainly will, Mr. Jennings. I have your phone number on a business card. Thank you for informing me," Lionel said.
Lionel sat down, lit up his pipe. He made a swirling motion with his fingers as he held the match to the tobacco. He had to admit that he hadn't given his son Gary much thought during the last few months. Gary had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and had been residing at the House of Hope for about a year now. Lionel had tried to contact Gary with the news of his mother's passing. Lionel also left phone messages for Gary at the House of Hope, but Gary had not returned his father's phone calls. As Lionel puffed on his pipe, he now realized that he had more things to think about than just coming up with a sabbatical research project for Dean Sanderson. Chapter 18. The trip from Winnipeg to Aunt Meg's in Kelowna, British Columbia was a tiring but enjoyable one for John Richards and his son and daughter. John drove long hours to make it to Meg's in 2 days. Fortunately, both Stephanie and Ryan had their driver's licenses and took turns spelling their father off when he became tired from driving. The proof was that John, Stephanie, and Ryan were all having the time of their lives. When you're in the car for 10 to 12 hours each day, you have a lot of time to talk and catch up on what's been going on in each other's lives. John asked his son and daughter what they planned to do after graduation from high school. Ryan responded first, "I'd like to continue my hockey and football careers after I graduate from Elmwood High. If you can make the pros, that's where the money is. Heck, you can make more than a surgeon working in a hospital." Ryan was a dedicated athlete, possessed both a passion and natural ability for athletics. "Yeah, that's great," John said. "You're very athletically gifted, Ryan, but a lot of kids at your skill level still don't make the pros." "I know that, Dad," Ryan answered. "Also, you'd have to make a choice between football and hockey. You won't be able to make the professional ranks in both sports," John said. "Well, how about Jerry James, who played for both the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Toronto Maple Leafs?" Ryan said, impressing his dad with his knowledge of sports history. "Who else can you name who is able to go pro in both sports?" "Also, Ryan, Jerry James played in the 1960s, John reminded him. "Are you trying to rain on Ryan's parade, Dad?" Stephanie joked. "Of course not. I believe that people should follow their dreams as long as they're being realistic," her father responded. "What about you, Steph? What would you like to do after you graduate?" John asked. John was a careful driver. He kept his eyes on the road, resisting the temptation to look at Stephanie. "Well, if you didn't think that Ryan's goals were realistic, you're sure not going to like mine," Stephanie said. "Go ahead, try me." "You might be surprised," her father replied. "Okay, here goes. Back in Toronto, me and a few of my friends have started up our own punk band. We've only had a few practices so far, but things are starting to fall into place," Stephanie said. Chapter 19. Lionel sat in his dark brown lazy boy chair, taking comforting puffs off his pipe. He began to think about his son, Gary. He hated to admit it to himself, but at times he tried to forget that Gary even existed. Gary had just turned 28. He'd often lived with his parents for brief periods of time. Gary would leave the home temporarily when he decided he wanted the freedom of living in his own apartment. At other times, living with his family would become too stressful. Things would usually become intolerable when Gary decided that either there was nothing wrong with him or that he thought he was cured from his schizophrenia. The positive symptoms of schizophrenia, such as hallucinations and delusions, would start to manifest in a few days after Gary stopped taking his medications. As these symptoms exacerbated, Gary would frequently experience a complete psychotic break. During his last psychotic break, Gary went running up and down the street, screaming at Inyu that both his parents were reptilian creatures from outer space, that he could see them changing from their human forms into their reptilian forms. He would then try to place phone calls to the CIA and FBI to inform them that two aliens were living in his house. The last time this happened, Gary went outside the house to the street, stopped cars to warn him that his parents are aliens, and even knocked on the neighbor's doors to deliver the same message. One of the neighbors became very upset and called the police. In a few minutes, the police arrived at the Hardy's door. Gary had walked a short distance, a little further down the street, and was still trying to stop cars and warn people about his parents. Two police constables arrived at the family home and spoke with Lionel and Edith Hardy for a few minutes. Our son Gary is very ill with schizophrenia. He must have stopped taking his medications and is experiencing a complete break from reality, Edith explained. That's right, Lionel interjected. He is having hallucinations and delusions. They're telling him that my wife and I are reptilians from another planet. Thank you, the female constable said. Constable Myers and I will restrain Gary as gently as possible and take him to the hospital so he can be promptly treated. Okay, I think I'm going to hold it right there for now. And next time we'll start with chapter 20.